This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about Elder Abuse Awareness Month, which is this month, May. We'll be talking about elder fraud and a variety of things that I hope that you will find valuable for you and perhaps your next-door neighbor, if that neighbor may be an older person and you suspect that that person may well be the victim of some kind of elder abuse. We'll talk about that. My guests are San Francisco Assistant District Attorney Cheryl Matthews of the Elder Financial Abuse Unit, Cindy Rasmussen, a supervisor in the San Francisco Adult Protective Services Office, Lieutenant Art Stellini of the San Francisco Police Department, and Inspector Andrea Higgins, Inspector with the San Mateo County DA's office, my office. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, also by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Welcome very much to the program. I'm awfully glad you're here. Cindy, would you do this? Would you get us going with what really is elder abuse?
Elder abuse occurs when either a senior or a dependent adult experiences either physical abuse, financial abuse, in some cases abandonment by a caregiver, could be isolation, it could be abduction in some cases, and very frequently it's neglect by others, particularly sometimes family or caregivers. In California, there is an APS program in every county in California, and there is a hotline number that your viewers can contact if they'd like to know who the Adult Protective Services program is.
Why don't we give that right now? Do you have that handy?
Yes, I do. In California, you can call 1-800-814-0009, and they can connect you to the program in your county. I also want to mention that in California, a senior is defined as a person 65 years of age or over, and a dependent adult is a younger adult between the ages of 18 and 64 who has either a physical, mental disability or a developmental disability that they experience that makes them vulnerable to abuse or unable to protect their own rights.
So on a statewide basis, the adult protective offices also cover dependent adults?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Good.
And that is a vulnerable population also.
I know that you were involved with a case that you wanted to talk about, and maybe we can start with that as an example to try to get the interest of the listeners out there in terms of what we're trying to get across.
Sure.
If you would.
Of course. This is what is commonly known as a sweetheart scam, and I think this is very typical, unfortunately. We had a case a couple of years ago at Adult Protective Services of a gentleman named Jack, who was 87 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. He made the acquaintance of a much younger woman at a grocery store in San Francisco, and she befriended him. He was a widower, and he was lonely and vulnerable, I think, because of that. And she made his acquaintance and continued to contact him. And a relationship ensued, and for a couple of months they were involved with one another, and he became convinced that she was in love with him. She did a great sales job, and as a result he became very fond of her. After a couple of months she asked him for a check for $30,000 because she claimed that she needed some breast reconstruction surgery and that she didn't have the money to pay for this, but could he possibly loan her the money and she would pay him back. Of course, as kind of expected, he did do that, and a couple of days later, Adult Protective Services was notified about this case, and we went out, and with the cooperation of the police department, we were able to actually encounter the abuser when she came to visit him the following day. And she was actually arrested and has been prosecuted. I'm sure others will tell you about how that went. But the success of this story was that because of the collaboration with these other agencies, the police and the district attorney's office, this man has been able to get the bulk of his money back. And interestingly enough, this woman wasn't just abusing this client that we knew about, but there were three other victims as well, and she had several checks from other people in her purse when she was arrested.
So how did, what is intriguing about this, how did APS or wherever the notification was made to, how did that office find out that Jack had given her a check for $30,000 before she actually was able to deposit it and spend it?
Well, in this particular case, someone called and reported this to Adult Protective Services. Our workers went out immediately because
of
the...
But that's what I'm trying to find out. Mm-hmm. How did that person know to call APS?
Well,
do you know?
Well...
You don't have... I know there's some confidentiality here.
Yes,
you don't
is.
Have to give anybody's name or whatever, but I'm just wondering... How this happened so quickly? Was it a next-door neighbor, or what was it?
Well, we can't divulge who calls us, but I can tell you that it was someone concerned about him.
Okay.
And that was the way it developed.
One of the things that I think is important in our discussion is the role that perhaps neighbors play. You know, we all want to be polite, and we all don't want to, I suppose, we don't want to be nosy with our next-door neighbors. On the other hand, we may see that something strange is going on next door. And I'm wondering what recommendations you all have in terms of a next-door neighbor seeing something that just doesn't look like right. Like, for example, with Jack, this younger woman, I bet she was no older than in her 30s, I suspect.
You were right.
By the way, did she have to have breast surgery, do you know, or was that all bogus?
It was bogus.
It was bogus. Yeah, poor Jack.
Mm-hmm.
So what recommendations do you have? Cheryl, what recommendations do you have for people who are neighbors and maybe see something that they feel is just not right?
It was a friend of the family's that did notice that this particular person, Jack, had some changes in his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And after...
Well, he may have been more frisky.
I have no comment. But you might be right. And this particular friend was really concerned, especially in...
This was a friend.
It was a family friend.
Okay.
And that person came forward and tried to talk to Jack. It was unsuccessful, and watched and waited and was able to provide police and law enforcement with some information.
That's wonderful.
And after an investigation, and thanks to APS and some others, we found two other victims of this particular woman using the same scam on two other men, much older men. And
Much older than Jack?
No, Jack, by the way, was a Holocaust survivor.
No kidding.
And so we were able to... I think that was Greg Ovanessian that worked that case.
Spector Ovanessian.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he found two other victims.
Mm.
And we were able to prosecute and get their money back. In fact, at the on the day of her sentencing, she had to come up with a significant amount of money for all of the victims. We divvied it up proportionally.
Where had she put the money? Had she put it across the sea somewhere?
No, we think it was in just stashed with her boyfriend.
Oh, was it? Okay.
That was a gypsy case, too.
That was a gypsy case.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a group of people, and not, you know, we say a gypsy case in law enforcement. It's an organized group of individuals.
Oh, so they're all
working
together. Conspiring
together
to rip off poor old Jack and poor old John and poor old Jim.
Then the money's divvied up. Yeah. I like to call these people predators.
Well, sure they are.
Because they
they're vultures.
They pick out their targets,
and
when they're done, they walk away.
Well, of course. Of course, they have no compulsion.
No.
For anybody. No sympathy whatsoever. Andrea?
Chuck, I think that points out something that we talked about earlier, which is it takes the entire community to protect seniors from predators like this, because it's often neighbors or bank tellers or... You know, people who are close to these elders who first observe this predatory behavior. So I think that those are the folks that need to be in contact with APS on an even more regular basis. When they suspect something like this, they need to overcome their reticence to become involved in what could be considered a private matter.
Let me do this while we're there. I would like you, if you have something to write with, by the way, I'd like to give you some basic numbers again and a website. This is important for you to have. Should you perhaps be a victim yourself, or you're concerned about someone who's a victim? Cindy gave the California number, and I'm going to give it to you again, the hotline number. It's 1-800-814-0009. The Department of Insurance has a website, and there's a section on seniors in terms of elder abuse. You may want to look at that. Elder financial abuse, www.insurance.ca.gov, and then you look for seniors. There is an insurance helpline, Department of Insurance helpline, 1-800-927-4357. We're going to talk a little bit about annuity fraud. And then there is a Cantonese hotline that San Francisco has, and this is very important for persons who speak Cantonese, and that's 415-553-9212, 415-553-9212. You know, time is flying here, and if you don't mind, let me do something. What suggestions do you have for older persons who may be living alone? Very vulnerable. Obviously, Jack was very vulnerable when he sees this young woman, probably very attractive, who's paying a lot of attention to him. It was probably something he could not avoid. He just couldn't look away.
And she was doing errands and things for him.
Sure, mm-hmm. Of course, yeah. So what if someone is by him or herself? What kinds of suggestions do you have for them so that they are not so vulnerable?
Well, first of all, I think we should look at our victims who we're talking about, where they come from, and mm-hmm. their backgrounds, the lives that they've lived. They come from an era where, you know, they had a family structure. They were trusting people.
They didn't lock the back doors.
They didn't lock the back doors. You know, different forms of religion. And they see the good in people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the community we're talking about. That's the age group that we see. So when they're confronted or come in contact with these predators, that's how they feel. They feel trusting. They want to give. To look at the other side of that coin, you know, their common sense kicks in, and it tells them maybe this is wrong. What I'm hearing here. But again, they always go on the side of, you know, I want to trust them. Yeah, I want to make a new friend. That plays a part of their thinking process, and they bring in their family members. If it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of our elders are looking for the quick, you know, the quick buck. If somebody says, "Oh, I can, you know, I can double your $30,000." They believe that, and they take that chance
mm-hmm.
when that's the only $30,000 they got to their name.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, one of the things I would look at, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
Yeah. Would you say this though? What percentage would you say of elder financial abuse is perpetrated by family members?
Well,
Cindy,
please. Sure. I think at APS we realize now, and it's a sad fact, that between 85% and 90% of all elder abuse is perpetrated by family. Mm-hmm. This is primarily adult children, sad comment.
Yeah.
But it seems to be the fact.
And what I have found in doing programs like this when we do it from time to time, and also, although it has not been my job in the San Mateo County DA's office to prosecute elder abuse, although I've had some cases that have had that element in it, what I have found is that older persons' parents are very reluctant to want to believe that their child is doing this, or report this at all, or get involved with adult protective services.
Mm-hmm.
What recommendation do you have to them? Or what can you say? I mean, you know, when you've got blood, the blood of your child is doing this to you, it's very hard to think, gee, my child is ripping me off.
Right. It's very painful for these elders, as Art was mentioning, and I think that's one of the things that Adult Protective Services runs up against is these older people are victims. They sometimes even recognize it, but because they're afraid that if that caregiver family member gets arrested and prosecuted, they will have no help at home. And so
that's
they prefer a little help, even though they know they're being taken advantage of, to no help at all. What we try and do when we go out to see these elders is to educate them about some other services that we might be able to offer them so that they can live in their current environment, but more safely. But oftentimes, they don't want to prosecute, and that's a struggle we have.
One of the things that I have found in doing my consumer work for the district attorney's office in San Mateo is that some people who may be alone, older persons who may be alone, who may be perhaps the victim, possible victim of, for example, I had one case, the Canadian lottery, believe it or not, and this woman had sent to the so-called attorney for the Canadian lottery $200,000 because she had won $500,000. Or pardon me, she only sent $100,000. Excuse me. Mm. She won $500,000. The next week, he called her back to say, oh, we made a mistake, Mrs. So-and-so. You actually won $1,000,000. Could you send us another $100,000 for the taxes? What I have found is that persons who are vulnerable like this are very suspicious of Adult Protective Services. They feel that you're going to take me out of my home. You're going to put me in some place where I don't have my own home. What comments do you have about that, Cindy? Generally speaking, the philosophy of Adult Protective Services offices throughout the state, what comments do you have?
Well, I think what I'd like to say to listeners is that, you know, we like to be seen as a resource. We are not the police. We come, and we're social workers by training, and we are a voluntary agency. We have no fees for our services, but rather than go out and say we're from a government agency, we'll say we're a social worker with the city and county. Mm-hmm. We'd like to talk with you about some services that you might be eligible for, things that we can, you know, help you to make you more comfortable where you are or to keep you safer. And our goal at APS is not to take people out of their home, but to keep them in their home, just albeit in a safer environment.
Andrea, I know that you have specialized in annuity fraud. Could you give us a little rundown on that, brief rundown on that in this half hour of the statewide version of the program?
Absolutely, Chuck. Thank you. Annuities are a specialized financial product. They're an insurance product that actually pays out an income over time, depending on how much money is put in and what type of annuity is purchased. Elders are frequently, I won't say targeted, but they are a large part of the annuities market for insurance salespeople. Sometimes that's a good fit for the elders, sometimes it's not. And so part of what I do as part of a grant that's funded by the Department of Insurance is I investigate cases where annuities may have been sold to seniors under circumstances that constitute fraud. For example, a person who may have been in advanced stages of dementia at the time that an annuities product was sold, a complex financial product like an annuity was sold to that person. So that's a big part of what I do is investigating cases where an annuity may have been sold inappropriately, but also doing prevention in outreach opportunities like this to help educate seniors and their family members to help seniors avoid being taken advantage of by potentially unscrupulous salespeople.
All right. Let me ask you this. Caregivers. Every once in a while, I will read about a caregiver who has taken advantage of his or her employer, has used the employer's ATM card or credit card or whatever. What comments do you have for our listeners about caregivers, and what should you be looking out for? Andrea?
Well, I would say in general, we talked about this earlier, the idea that it takes a community of attentive people in a senior's life to prevent abuse. So oftentimes caregivers have a unique opportunity to take advantage of elders. They've ingratiated themselves to those elders. And I think Cindy talked about this earlier. There's a certain dynamic, a psychological dynamic that takes place where the elder doesn't want to have to be taken out of their home and placed in another environment. Caregivers will sometimes create that idea that if the elder speaks up about the fraud, if the elder's aware of the fraud, that that will lead to the elder being institutionalized, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I believe that, you know, it's incumbent on all of us as observers and people who have elders in our lives to be aware of these potential situations. We're also lucky in the state of California in that banks are mandatory reporters of suspected fraudulent activities, such as, you know, a caregiver that's appearing to be mm-hmm. more involved in an elder's financial life than they ought to be.
Art, you had a case, I think, that we were talking about before we went on the air. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I just wanted to piggyback, Andrea.
Yeah, please.
You know, in our continuing police training, we have officers come in, and we talk about financial elder abuse and exactly what Andrea was speaking about. And we tell our officers, you know, when you have your parents or come under this life situation, you know, I tell them, you know, check your parents' bank books. Look at the checkbooks. Because you get that sense of security that when you come to the house, there's food in the refrigerator, the house is clean. So you that tension or whatever it is, your guard goes down. Mm-hmm. And you believe mm-hmm. everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to stress that, you know, look at the bank accounts, look at the checking accounts, see what's going on. Some people, you know, like their parents have cash in the house so that the caregiver can go make day-to-day purchases. And they'll allow them, they'll give up the codes. It doesn't take much to, you know, keep rolling.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of trust there.
Sure there is.
When we're dealing with situations like that where the caregiver has access to cash, et cetera, well, one of the things that I've experienced in doing some of the work in my office is that parents sometimes are reluctant to let their kids check their checkbooks or check their bank statements, etc. How do you, that's very difficult to get over. Hey, I'm the parent here. I'm the adult. What do you mean you want to check my bank account? What do you mean you want to check my bank statement? How do you deal with that? Or do you, Cindy? Are you confronted with that ever? And how do you try to help an older person realize, hey, This is for your benefit.
Yeah. It's difficult. I mean, they're proud, you know, and they want to remain as independent as possible. But I think what we try and do is develop some kind of a rapport and relationship with our clients. We try to engage them and perhaps, you know, a little education. And sometimes it takes some convincing, but we really try and work with them to help them see that maybe there is a better way here, you know, to handle their funds or something like that. It's not always easy. And actually, we're very happy when we find that there are involved, what I'll call good family members who can step in and perhaps at least, you know, do some oversight with the person's finances. The more worrisome thing is when we see isolated seniors who have no one and who are perhaps declining cognitively, and there's no one to help them manage their funds.
Mm-hmm.
So those are challenging cases.
How do you deal with someone like that?
Well, we work with others that might be involved with them. If there is no one else, we may try to put in place a fiduciary, someone mm-hmm. that can pay their bills. The Office of the Public Guardian in San Francisco has a representative payee program that can do some of that if it's relatively simple financial stuff. In extreme cases, when we have a very, very severely impaired person who has no one and needs a much higher level of management, both maybe for person and the estate, we look sometimes to the Office of the Public Guardian and we pursue a probate conservatorship.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's sort of the path of last resort.
Why is May Elder Abuse Month, Elder Abuse Awareness Month? What happened here that May was it? Is it because it's Mother's Day in May? Or I'm just wondering, is there any particular reason for this?
Well, I would have to say the name of the person that we can give a lot of credit to is Helen Carr.
Well, Helen's been a guest on this program and been very helpful. She's the one who brought this to my attention a couple of months ago. Why is Helen so big on this?
Well, Helen has been involved in elder abuse for a long time, and she is now working in our office in San Francisco.
She's an attorney also.
She is an attorney. And she is responsible for making banks mandated reporters. She was part of that legislative push, and she is still in the process of developing other legislative acts that can be helpful to elders.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to say that why is May Elder Abuse Awareness Month? I'm not entirely sure exactly.
I should have checked with you ahead of time without asking a question that I didn't know the answer to.
Well, I don't know the answer, but I would have to give a whole lot of credit to Helen Carr in the state of California as to the work that she has done. And in fact, this will be our opportunity to give a plug to our Elder Abuse Financial Protection Network, our call to action, which is on May the 24th. It's going to be at the Holiday Inn at 1500 Van Ness in the city and county of San Francisco. And we are inviting businesses, banks, and anyone else who would like to participate to give us a call on that. My number is 415-551-9527. And we will be starting. The doors open at 7:30. But we start at 9 o'clock, and we have all sorts of medical...
You're talking about this is in the morning.
This was on May the 24th.
Yeah, in the morning. 7:30 in the morning.
7:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Thank you.
<All right>.
Give us a call and come see us.
All right. That number, again, in case you're interested, is for this event on May 24th, 415-551-9527. All right, it is nearly 7:28, as a matter of fact. And one of the things I just want to mention very, very briefly, of course, is our website, www.klw.org. For those of you who are listening to us live throughout the state on the Internet, you're on www.klw.org. And as you may know, I've been doing this program for 28 years. I did it... as an exclusively funded program by the State Bar of California, as a service to you, a service to everybody in terms of what people need to know about basic information about legal rights. And the people who have been on my program all these years are people who are very interested in serving. And so if this has meant something to you in terms of the value of public service by all of the people who have been involved with this program, I would ask you, if you're not yet a member, to go to the website www.klw.org and hit donate now and support what we're doing. And we would appreciate that very much. And hopefully we'll continue to do this and not have to have any commercials. And that's what I love about this. So, by the way, if you would like to join us with any questions in the area of elder abuse, whether it's physical abuse or financial abuse, join us. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. I just want to mention to those of you, unfortunately, who may be facing a foreclosure tomorrow at the San Mateo County Law Library, that's Thursday, May 10th at noon, there will be a presentation by a couple of attorneys, Ruben Nokos and Najib Kudaya. They'll present an overview of foreclosure, including how it works and workouts that may help save your home. That'll be, again, at the San Mateo County Law Library. That's in Redwood City, across the street from the Hall of Justice, where my office is. That's 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. And if you'd like, and by the way, you can bring your bag lunch. It's free, of course. And if you'd like some more information, you can call the library. I think Karen has returned the librarian from her vacation. That number is 650-363-4913. 650-363-4913. What I want to do is encourage you. You know, I think this area of elder abuse is a very difficult area for some people to face in terms of what have I seen, what's going on. I don't want to recognize it. I just want to ignore it. And yet, if you don't do something about it, it can only get worse. So I want to encourage you, if you do want to call in, please, you don't have to give your real name. Give Martin a phony name. It doesn't matter. And the number is 1-415-841-4134. Before we take our first call, are there any crucial things that we haven't even touched upon that you want to talk about? Yes, Cindy, please. By the way, let me do this. I'm pardon me for being so essentially rude. I don't mean to be rude, but let me tell you who my guests are. And my guests are, and we'll go a little bit different than we started at the program, Inspector Andrea Higgins of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, Lieutenant Art Stellini of the San Francisco Police Department. Art won the lottery in the police department, and now he's doing more than ever. Right, Art?
Just some new responsibilities.
There is no time for sleep, as I understand it, right?
Yes, it's
yeah,
all
that's
good.
Right. Okay.
It's all good.
Cindy Rasmussen, a supervisor of the San Francisco Adult Protective Services Office, and last but certainly not least is San Francisco Assistant District Attorney Cheryl Matthews of the Elder Financial Abuse Unit. Thank you very much for joining us. All right. Let's do this. Anything you want, Cindy, you wanted to say something, then we'll take a call.
Sure. I just wanted to give to the viewers, the listeners, our samples.
No, they do see you.
Oh.
This is radio. You all really look great, by the way, as the listeners can see you. Go ahead.
I just wanted to put out to the listeners our San Francisco Adult Protective Services direct hotline number. It's 415-355-6700. It's a 24-hour hotline. We do operate a 24-hour-a-day program here in San Francisco.
That's live? There's someone there live?
There is someone live to speak to 24-7.
Wow.
Yes,
wow.
Sir.
I'm impressed.
And the other thing I think that's important to know is that not only can you make a report of abuse at that phone number, but if you are a concerned neighbor or you are a senior who needs resources, that number will also get you to someone who can offer you some resources. This is an information and referral number as well, depending on what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So it's a centralized intake phone number. Then you can get an array of services, including even applying for things like home-delivered meals, wow, in-home supportive services, and other resources that San Francisco has to offer.
Are you aware of other counties that have as comprehensive a type of hotline throughout the state?
There are several other big cities in California, mm-hmm, that do have this, but mm-hmm, I will tell you that in rural counties, it's very difficult to provide, I think, the level of staffing and specialization that we do have in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We're very proud of our staff here.
Well, I hope that you will call in with your question, your comment, your concern, your problem. Billy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to know if your guests' agencies have relationships with senior commissioners, that is to say the private citizens who volunteer in so many cities to serve on senior advisory commissions, whether there are relationships there. Can they be of some value to the work that your guests do in their agencies?
You know, Billy, I've been a lawyer for a long time and a deputy district attorney for a long time. I have never heard of senior commissioners. What? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Redwood City.
Are you?
Redwood City has had a senior advisory commission.
And what essentially does it do?
Address matters of concern to the senior population here.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I am merely a candidate for a seat on the commission.
Are you?
I am generally ignorant of the topic, but.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, there is a relationship that may be developed between the Sequoia branch of the YMCA and mm-hmm, the Veterans Memorial Senior Center, which is run out of the Park and Recs Department, to share services or perhaps even actually share a building together. That's merely an example. Elder abuse is something that, for goodness sake, I would think commissioners would be concerned about.
You would hope so. Let me get some comments. Any comments? Does anybody know anything about this?
In San Francisco, I'm not aware about it. But as you know, we have many different agencies or stakeholders in our communities that we all work collaboratively together. The district attorney's office, APS, law enforcement, and many other advocate groups who have seniors' best interests at heart.
Well, thank you for suggesting that, Billy. I don't think that my guests really know much about this at all. But, you know, let me know, by the way, if you become a senior commissioner in Redwood City, why don't you give me a call at my office in the Hall of Justice in the DA's office?
I will, sir.
And let me know what's going on, because I'm interested in finding out more about it.
All right, sir. I'll do
okay,
that.
Okay, will you?
Thank you all for your good work.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. This is Your Legal Rights. The number is 1-415-841-4134, and the website is www.kalw.org. And David, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a longtime listener to your program. I think your program is absolutely fantastic and provides an extremely valuable public service. And I was very taken aback. I would have to use the word shocked at the beginning of your program to hear one of your guests, I believe it was the person from the San Francisco Police Department, utter a totally egregious cultural and ethnic slur. He referred to organized groups of people who participate in these frauds as gypsies. And gypsies are a recognized ethnic and cultural group. I personally, as a professional flamenco guitarist, have spent a lot of time in southern Spain learning aspects of the gypsy culture, and I think it does a tremendous disservice to this group of people to use their name as a kind of a catch-all for this kind of fraudulence. And the fact that this is coming from someone in the police department in a position of authority, to me, is evidence of a certain kind of ignorance, and I won't use the word racism, but I would use the word ethnic and cultural prejudice that really should be looked at more carefully.
Well, David, let me get some comments from Lieutenant Art Stellini, because I didn't take it that way, and I appreciate your concern and that you feel that is it, but I think, frankly, with your reaction to this, that Art needs to respond so that at least you can feel or hear what he has to say. Turn your radio back up. Get the answer from your radio, if you would. But, Art, what comments do you have for David?
Well, first of all, David, this is Lieutenant Stellini. First of all, I'll apologize to you and any of the other listeners I might have offended by that comment. And in no way did I intend to categorize any group of people as behaving in a certain criminal conduct. I was speaking in generalizations of how these groups of different individuals, and they come from different backgrounds, and some are from, you know, one class of ethnic background to another. And I was speaking in generalizations, and again, of course, I didn't mean to identify gypsies as behaving in a criminal conduct. That's absolutely 100% away from what I was trying to relate.
Okay.
It's exact opposite.
All right. Go, yeah, if you would, Cheryl, please.
Yes, and I think it's sometimes we just use the term and never in a derogatory manner, and that these are people that kind of move around.
They come and go.
They
hit you, and they're boom, they're gone.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe different parts of town, different cities, different times. It'll be the same group of people that are moving around in two different cities.
Well, David, thank you very much for calling and bringing that up. Let's move on. Joseph, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, I'm calling regarding my mom. I'm a primary caregiver for her. She has severe dementia, and she's been in a all-in-one caregiver called Center for Elder Independence in Alameda County. And she started off being around 170 pounds. Now she's down like 96 pounds over 5 years. She had about 15 teeth, and now she's down to 7 teeth. And in the last 2 years, I've been making complaints, concerns to the health care provider. I mean, there's a health care provider, and then there's a respite care home she lives in, which they're tied together through Medi-Cal. And unfortunately, she's in the family meeting last year. I met with the doctor. He told me my mom may have 3 months to live, you know, which I was really shocked to hear. It was shocking. But at the same time, I was concerned about her weight at that time being 120.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no problem. She should be fine. I said, well, I'm worried about her dropping this weight.
Yeah.
Really, there's been no recourse. I did make a complaint at the first of the year. And the
a complaint to whom?
To the Center for Elder Independence. They had their public relations person send me a report. They did an investigation. They said everything looked fine.
And it doesn't. Yeah.
That I go to.
Let me get a comment, Joseph. Let me get a comment. I'm sorry. Joseph. Let me get a comment from Cindy, because although I know nothing about this, certainly I see red flags when I hear what you're talking about. And Cindy, what comments do you have for Joseph?
Hey, Joseph. Yeah, it sounds to me like you have some very valid concerns. I think what I would suggest to you is to contact the local ombudsman, the office of the ombudsman in Alameda County, and report this. Hopefully they can investigate, and that is the agency that would investigate any kind of potential abuse or neglect by a facility, either an assisted living facility or a skilled nursing facility. That would fall under their purview, and I would really urge you to continue to do that. You can also call Community Care Licensing, which is the state agency, and make a report, because they will investigate.
Either of those, Joseph?
Community Care Licensing?
Yeah, have you done that?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I didn't know about the Community Care Licensing. Where's that located?
It's in Sacramento. I think you can probably
Google it. Community Care Licensing. Google it that way. Yeah.
Yes.
You need to do that, Joseph, because the way you describe this, it does sound really something's wrong here. Mm-hmm. Seriously,
well, actually,
wrong.
The facility is supposed to offer physical therapists, occupational therapists, podiatrists, dentists, MD, the whole bit, and they get a state contract for $3,200 per month. For my mom, they've been getting it for 5 years, and she's never received $3,000 worth of service.
Well, then you need to report this. This is serious stuff.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I really
appreciate it. Good luck to you, Joseph. Yeah, but no, this is not right whatsoever. Okay, this is your legal rights, 1415-841-4134, website www.kalw.org. I'm Chuck Finney, and we're talking about elder abuse awareness. May is the Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and I had hoped that Helen Carr would be here. She's been a guest on this program before, a significant attorney. She is now working in the San Francisco DA's office. She's the one a couple of months ago who suggested we do this, and unfortunately she could not be here. I hope you're listening to the program, Helen, and I wish you the best, and I look forward to seeing you in the future. My guests are San Francisco Assistant District Attorney Cheryl Matthews of the Elder Financial Abuse Unit, Cindy Rasmussen, a supervisor of the San Francisco Adult Protective Services Office, Lieutenant Art Stellini of the San Francisco Police Department, and Inspector Andrea Higgins, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. So if you'd like to join us with your questions, your comments, your concerns, it's 1415-841-4134. Francis, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, sure. You're fine.
Okay.
You've got a good radio voice.
Thank you. A couple of your guests were talking about earlier was parents who have always been very private about their financial matters, of trying to reverse decades of family habits about not talking about finances or having control issues of, like, I'm the parent, you're the child, regardless of what our ages are. My parents are, one is, if you paste them together, they are one fully functioning human. One is disabled with a working brain, and the other is very physically fit, but with Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
if one of them goes, the other couldn't handle it. But they withhold information sometimes.
Well, you're suspect.
Answer our calls for a long period of time, and we've tried to talk to them about, we need to know about your finances. We need to talk about allowing a visiting nurse in, and they argue in every way. We won't let strangers help us. We won't talk about our money. Like the ability to just broach subjects of only when the first time we were able to talk about something is when my mom fell and broke her ankle in three places. So we're trying to, we would like to make proactive decisions that they want. And
how old are Francis?
They want.
How old are your parents?
they're the greatest generation, so they're in their 80s.
80s, yeah. They're tough, so tough cookies.
The mom is 80 and the father is 88. And we know that if my dad hit the floor and my mom can't even dial a phone anymore.
Oh,
so so the ability to broach the subject it has been suggested to me that the only thing I could do is when there was a crisis that something like the agencies for elder abuse would then descend, and that sounds like a disaster.
Well, you're looking for some help in terms of what do you do, right?
Getting the conversations going and getting their participation. So
doesn't sound like there's much chance at this point. But go ahead, Cindy. What comments do you have for Francis?
Well, Francis, you're in a tough spot. But I think one suggestion I might make to you is to involve the doctor, and maybe the doctor can have a conversation with, is it mom that's the still kind of cognitively intact? Is it your mother, your father?
The dad, my dad is intact, and my mother has early Alzheimer's.
Okay. Yeah. What I think sometimes is useful is to have a professional outsider, someone that they do trust, someone that's not family, who can sit down and kind of have a heart-to-heart with your father and say, it's time, you know, to make some changes, it's time to put some things in place, and you're going to have to work, you know, with your family members to come up with a plan for your future. How are you going to handle these things in the future? Sometimes it's received better from a physician because they respect that authority as opposed to a family member, particularly one of us adult children who, you know, are trying to convince them and they're balking. So I would try that, or if there's another, if they happen to have an attorney that they deal with for their estate matters or something, sometimes someone like that might be more successful in convincing them.
Does your father trust a doctor?
Oh, boy.
Okay, I knew that's what it was. I just knew it. Boy, Francis. Francis, are you the caregiver?
I'm the third of three daughters, so I have no power of attorney, which means that I get the information last. And I'm told, well, you don't have to because you don't have to, so we don't have to tell you at all.
My siblings. Francis, do either of your sisters have the medical power of appointment for your parents?
Yes.
They do. Okay. Well, at least your parents did that.
Yeah, we have. It actually took us 5 years of negotiating and my mom falling three times before to get them to plug into MedAlert, and that's all we've been able to get them to
goodness.
Do.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. What incredible. Well, I don't...
I'm just worried about a social worker coming in and accusing my dad of elder abuse because of sort of allowing my mom and allowing each other to live the way they do, and allowing it to escalate.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Boy, you are really in a tough spot.
Is there a pastor or a priest or a friend, a neighbor, that can talk to them to get them to give one of the responsible children the power of attorney, a power to make medical decisions, and maybe make up some scenarios that would be could be very real for your father if something happens to you. How are we going to take care of your mother? An uncle, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, cousins.
Neighbors, cousins. Mm-hmm.
Anyone that can talk to them. And
is there anyone who can talk to your father?
His next-door neighbor, who's an engineer, is the only guy he'll talk to.
Really? Will he accept the next-door neighbor's statements? Hey, you know, you need to be more flexible with your kids in terms of your care and future care of both you and your wife. Would he listen to this fellow?
We find that it's just a timing thing of that if we try to have too many conversations, say, in the course of 1 month, he'll stop answering the phone sometimes.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy. Yeah, he thinks
correct.
It's a conspiracy.
They're really paranoid about, like, we're trying to over or take away their independence as siblings.
Sure, of course.
I guess, just wondering the right thing to do, the legal thing to do, or maybe the right words to say make it clear that we want them to make their own decisions so we can enact, not because we want to tell them what to do.
Did your parents ever have a lawyer, Francis?
Yes, they do.
So they still have a lawyer?
Yes, and we know who it is, but as far as we have been instructed so far of that, that represents our parents, not us. So
well, of course.
Unless there was an emergency, we can't talk to them or ask them anything.
Well, who says you can't talk to them?
Mm-hmm.
Your parents?
My really poor understanding of the law, hence why I'm calling you.
No, I don't agree with that whatsoever.
The lawyer doesn't have to talk to you, but you can talk to the lawyer.
Yeah. Exactly.
Give him details, A, B, C, and D, everything that's going on, and
absolutely.
Let him exert some pressure on your parents to get these done because it's the wise and legal thing to do.
Sure. You know, if they trust the lawyer, I mean, that's the way to do this. I mean, what you can do is send a lawyer if the lawyer won't, hey, I won't talk to you because your dad said you're a conspirator. But you know, you can send the lawyer a letter saying, these are my concerns. Mm-hmm. Is this a man lawyer?
It's kind of like a larger firm that used to be one guy that has grown over.
Well, do they trust a particular person or a bunch of persons?
We do know the name of the person that is specifically signed.
Okay.
He's assigned to them, but he's the the owner of the law firm. I presume at this point, you know, they contracted with him probably 50 years ago, and at this
kidding.
Point he may be very hands off.
Why don't you do this, Francis? If you haven't, where do you live, by the way?
I live in San Francisco.
Where do your parents live?
New York State.
Oh, in New York. That's a problem. Well, you know what? And the attorney is in New York?
In New Jersey.
Used to be. Where is he now?
No, in New Jersey.
Oh, I'm sorry. New Jersey. Excuse me. You know, I think what you need to do, if I may make the suggestion, I've been a lawyer for a long time. I do a lot of stuff involving consumer problems, et cetera, et cetera. I am not an estate planning attorney. However, in using just common sense, which, of course, Cheryl has just mentioned to you, I think you should write a letter addressed to this particular attorney. I think what you should do, please, is call a law firm, see if this attorney is still practicing law there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, frankly, if they hired this man 50 years ago, he may be retired. Although, if he's the main person, he may still be there. And
the
I think
law firm still exists because I Googled it.
Well, sure. But I think you should call and find out, is Mr. So-and-so still practicing?
Mm-hmm.
And if he is not practicing, find out who's the manager of the office. Tell him you're concerned about your parents, that your parents have been clients of the law firm for a long time, and you'd like to direct a letter to an attorney who has taken over for Mr. So-and-so about the concerns you have about your parents. That's what I would do.
Okay.
I'd start that way.
That's a really clear, concrete thing to
Well, I think
do.
It's the thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what I have found with a lot of stuff is if you can, although the emotions here are so great, your parents are really tough. They are toughies.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are really tough. I've not heard anything quite this bad in terms of how resistant they are.
Well, they've never needed help in their lives from anybody, so they're darned if they're going to take it
now. They don't want to be in some place where there are all these old people. That's what they're concerned about. But I think you need to write that letter. Good luck to you.
Great. Thank you very, very much.
Take care, Francis. Bye-bye. I think we have time for one more call. Perry, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
So I have an elderly relative who let one of her siblings take care of her finances. And unfortunately, the finances were partially misspent. Mm. And there's not a lot of money left now.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of dealing with this as a family right now and figuring out, you know, we need to apply for Medicaid. And my sense is that Medicaid is going to look back at how these finances were spent. And it turns out that the sibling that misspent them is having his own mental illness problems right now. So we're trying to figure out what we can do to kind of account for this money and try to get the best care for...
Well, here's my thought on that. This is a very complex question. Where do you live?
So I'm here in California.
Yeah, I know you're in California, but what city?
San Francisco.
You're in San Francisco. You know, I'll tell you what I think would be very valuable, if you haven't thought of this, Perry, is I think you need to speak, if you haven't done it, with an estate planning attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought of doing that?
I haven't thought of it.
Okay, well, I think you should. And I'll give you the website for the Board of Legal Specialization. I'm a great believer in certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law. I think you really need to. If you go to, do you have access to the internet?
I do.
Yeah, www.californiaspecialist, that's singular, californiaspecialist.org.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should then put in San Francisco, and you'll find out who the certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law are, and call a couple and see what's involved in me coming and having an initial consultation. I've got some problems. You can talk with one of their paralegals or whatever initially on the phone and go in and talk. This is a very serious problem.
Yeah.
And if you want, you know, if you don't get anywhere with that, you can call me at my office. Chuck Finney, F-I-N-N-E-Y, 650-363-4097. I would suggest you try the Board of Legal Specialization. If you're not happy with that, call me, and I'll try to give you some direction. But frankly, this is a serious matter that a minute on a radio show doesn't work for. We have come to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for joining us. It's been great to have you here. San Francisco Assistant District Attorney Cheryl Matthews. Cindy Rasmussen of the San Francisco Adult Protective Services Office. Lieutenant Art Stellini of the San Francisco Police Department. And Inspector Andrea Higgins of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trusts and Estates section of the State Bar of California, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. By the way, next week we're going to do Call a Lawyer Night. For those of you who are interested, 1-800-525-9917. That's Call a Lawyer Night. Next Wednesday on the air, we'll do landlord-tenant laws and disputes. And my guests will be landlord-tenant attorney James Coy Driscoll and John Zanghi. That's spelled Z-A-N-G-H-I. It'll be John's initial performance on this program. So join us then. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Chuck Finney.